When was the last time you handwrote a letter? For most people, not recently. In the 19th century, letters were vital links to family and friends, and for historians today, they are a snapshot of daily life. The Kentucky Historical Society recently added 27 letters to its collection. Called the Watson and Robinson Letters, they contain information about the lives of free and enslaved families in Hopkinsville and Lexington. Louise Jones is the Director of Special Collections and the Martin F. Schmidt Research Library. She joins me to speak about the significance of the Watson and Robinson collection. Ms. Jones, thank you for joining me.
Okay, that sounds great.
So, I'm curious, how did the Kentucky Historical Society acquire these letters?
Well, it's a very interesting story, and yet not terribly complex. We were contacted by the daughter-in-law of the woman who owned the letters. The letters had been passed down to her from her grandmother, and she understood that her grandmother had gotten them from her grandmother, but at that point, the knowledge of the family names and whatnot kind of broke up. So she knew that she needed to sell the letters, unfortunately. She was in a financial situation that made that necessary, but she also wanted the letters to go someplace where they would be seen by the public, and her daughter-in-law, who contacted us, is a school teacher, and she wanted to ensure that they went to some place where young people today would be able to have contact with them. So she, since letters are written to somebody in Kentucky, she started with the Kentucky Historical Society, and we said, give us a minute to see whether we can raise the funds. And we were very lucky to be able to do so through the Kentucky Treasures Foundation, Kentucky Treasures Fund of the Kentucky Historical Society Foundation.
So the earliest letter is dated 1841. So how many years do they cover in total?
Well, it's interesting. The earliest letter is 1841, and the oldest letter is, I believe, 1883. The majority of the letters cover the period between 1841 and 1859. There are only two letters that date after the Civil War. And there are no letters, unfortunately, that cover the Civil War time period.
Do you have any idea why that might be?
Well, there are a couple of reasons, and I am supposing the answers to all of them. It's possible that the family was in such disarray during the Civil War that communication by letter was very difficult, and so they, the means by which they were getting letters back and forth just became too complicated to continue during the Civil War. It is also possible that letters did get exchanged, but that they are in the hands of a different family member. And our hope is that by getting the word out that we have these 27 letters, that someone will come forth and say, oh, I have some letters written between those people too.
So what kind of people were the Watson and Robinson family? Were they, you know, their economic status, you know, where they lived, that kind of thing?
Well, we have, it's kind of a complex answer to that question, so bear with me for a moment. We have some clues as to the owners of the people that Isabel is particularly writing to. Isabel Watson is writing to two people. One is Violet Ware, care of James Ware, and we understand, we've been able to research a little bit to see that James Ware was a slave owner, a white slave owner in Hopkinsville, in Christian County, but we have not been able to find a whole lot of information about him other than the census and a few tax records, where we're still looking for more information about them. And in terms of the Robert Faulkner, who apparently owns Reuben Faulkner, because Reuben's letters, Isabel writes to Reuben, care of Robert Faulkner. We have been able to get pretty much the same sort of information. He appears as a slave owner in the slave census. He also appears in the federal census and tax information and that sort of thing. But they appear to be farmers with a certain amount of property. But in terms of the individuals that they owned, these letters are really the only glimpse we've been able to find into the lives of the enslaved people in that area.
So what does it tell you about people, enslaved people in Hopkinsville and Christian County? Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It is Christian County. Let's see. We have been putting together some clues about the sort of things. Isabel is writing from Mississippi City to family and friends back in Hopkinsville. She's left the area, and one of the things that she writes most about is how much she misses them. She misses being in their community. She misses going to church with them. We're not really sure whether that means going to an actual church or just worshiping with them. We're not sure, but she, that topic comes up in her letters on a regular basis. Isabel is also very concerned with the health, the location of and the well-being of people that she remembers. So a lot of her letters are, you know, I haven't heard from the following people, and I'm worried. Are, you know, have they, you know, are, have you, do you have any knowledge of them? You know, are you going to church? Have you been to church lately? and things like that. So she's really asking Reuben and Violet for information about people that she just doesn't, she isn't hearing from. She does, in one of the letters, she stresses how attending church and finding Jesus will help her friends through their troubles. She does not mention what those troubles are.
Do the letters have a lot of specifics as far as what's going on in people's lives, or do they try to, are they more glossed over?
They have a lot of specifics about the names of people, but yes, she glosses over, you know, Isabel in particular does not, although she mentions knowing that someone has been sold, and she mentions also another person is with a particular master. Other than that, she never uses words like slavery or free.
Now, this is me speculating here at this point. Is that, do you think that might be because she's afraid of other people who, you know, aren't her family and friends will read the letters?
It is very possible. It is also very possible that because the handwriting in Isabel's letters changes, we are thinking that perhaps somebody is writing the letters for her. You know, that she's maybe dictating the letters because she herself is not literate. And it's possible that that person may be editing, but we don't know. We would love to know more.
Yeah. Now, are any of her letters, you said there are a few letters, two of them, that are after the Civil War. Are any of those written by Isabel?
They are not. We wish they were. Those two letters are written, appear to be written by the next generation. So one of the letters is written by a Violet, but it doesn't appear to be the Violet Weir that's being written to before the war. It may be a daughter or granddaughter or niece. Unfortunately, we're having a great deal of trouble finding information that clearly shows family lines before and after the Civil War. But the letters after the Civil War, there are two, one in 1873 and one in 1883. And they focus on more on sort of the individuals. So the 1873 letter writes about, you know, I am a teacher, he is a teacher, I have bought a home, I am, you know, I am doing this, I am doing that. So they seem to be sort of, they're more sort of that inward focus and lots of personal information, whereas the letters that Isabel and Ferdinand are writing are sort of, well, actually, most of Isabel's letters are very outward-looking, so she's trying to gather information, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you as a librarian, as a preserver of history, gather anything about her from reading her letters?
About Isabel?
As a person, what kind of person she was?
Isabel, and again, I'm going with my my gut here, I guess. I think she's an older lady. I think it sounds in the one snippet of the letter that talks about how she from her house she can see the water and she can see the steamboats going by. It sounds to me like maybe she's an older lady who is more maybe a little the phrase I'm looking for is that she's reached that point in her life where she's looking, you know, she's looking out over all the people in the family. I sort of see her as a matriarch, I guess is the best way to put it, because she does carry the tone through all of her letters of, and where is this person, and I need to know about that person, and I'm worried about whether you are all going to church, because I need to know that you're settled and you're safe, that kind of thing. She has that sort of matronly tone.
Yeah. Was there anything that you thought was surprising or of special interest in any of the letters?
Well, the letters from Ferdinand Robinson to his uncle Reuben, whom he refers to as Reuben Robinson, but who may also be the Reuben Faulkner that Isabel is writing to. Sorry to be so confused, but we're really going by the physical evidence we have in front of us. At any rate, the Ferdinand Robinson letters, there's one letter in particular that we just love to quote. Ferdinand Robinson is free. He writes in a letter to his uncle in 1850, I remember in your answer to my letter that you wished to know whether I was free or not. To this I answer, dear uncles, I am free.
Why is that special to you?
There's such presence in that statement. You know, he is, he's clearly proud of that, but he's also, he sounds confident. And from the little we've been able to find out about Ferdinand, he very quickly becomes a property owner. He has a business. And I would love to know more about where he and his children ended up and so forth. I just have the census in front of me, but when he is writing that letter in 1850, he is about 28 years old, 29 years old.
That's a good age to be free at.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So what do you think is the significance of these letters to Kentucky history?
I think they're significant because they tell us about people in general that are not appearing in history books. They give us a glimpse into the lives of people who are really hard to find. And they talk about a community in Christian County that is clearly very supportive, very interconnected. And, you know, I think that's fascinating.
Yeah. I'm thinking back to something that you said earlier, that when you got the letters, they were passed down, you know, from almost a matrilineal line, you know, mm-hmm. grandmother to daughter to granddaughter, that kind of thing. So what condition were the letters in when you received them?
They were in amazing condition. The donors clearly treasured these letters. They were in individual folders. The family had clearly kept very good care of them. And we will continue that legacy of keeping very good care of their treasures.
Do you have any tips for people who might have some family letters in their own collection, maybe in their attic or in a file folder somewhere, if they want to keep those and to pass those down? What do you think that they should do to make sure that they're preserved?
Well, I think that everybody has some kind of family treasure in their, or something that they treasure themselves that they want to pass on. I think it's sort of ingrained in us. But when you do, I think if you can provide the next generation with some information about the context of that item, I think that that helps. Each generation loses a little bit of information, as in fact we've lost all the connecting information about the Reuben and Isabel and Violet that connects them to this current generation. But I also think that physically, if you can keep them safe, if they're in your attic, maybe bring them down out of the attic since roofs leak, and don't put them in the basement since basements also leak. And you know, don't be afraid to contact the Kentucky Historical Society, because for more detailed information, we would be happy to help you.
Louise, thank you very much for speaking with me. Louise Jones of the Kentucky Historical Society.
You are welcome. It's been a pleasure.